This is Audible.
Listening Library presents The Valiant by Leslie Livingston, read for you by Fiona Hardingham. Chapter 1. The steam rising off the backs of the cantering horses faded into the morning fog. Our chariot raced toward the far end of the Forgotten Vale, and Malgun Ironhand, my charioteer, constant companion and frequent adversary, pulled back on the reins. "No," I shouted. "Faster! Make them run faster!" Mal didn't bother to spare a glance over his shoulder at me. He knew any argument would be futile. Instead, he gave the ponies their head and let them run. We flew over the ground like ravens diving over a battlefield. The horses snorted and strained, hooves drumming the grassy track and sending mist billowing in our wake. I stood behind Mal with a spear gripped tight in my right fist and my feet braced against the swaying motion of the chariot's suspended deck. The wind screeched in my ears and the ground was a blur beneath our wheels. We'd never gone so fast before, and my heart hammered in my chest. I shifted and moved past Mal, stepping out in front of the chariot's platform to balance on the square-sided draft pole that ran between the two horses. "Fallon, be careful," Mal called as one of my feet slipped on the wood. I hissed through clenched teeth as I almost fell and nearly lost my hold on my spear. Switching up my grip on the weapon, I regained my balance and peered ahead at the far end of the vale, where the ground sloped sharply upward into the grave barrow of a long-forgotten occupant. A single, rough-hewn stone crowned the round summit, and at the base of the hill, we'd set up a man-high target, a tree stump padded with hay, wrapped in canvas, and painted with the image of a grimacing, snaggle-toothed Roman soldier. I grinned, exhilaration prickling my skin. The wind whipped my hair back out of my eyes, and I saw everything with crystal clarity. It was as if time had stopped and was waiting just for me. Carefully, one foot in front of the other, I made my way forward on the draft pole as the horses thundered on. I held my breath until I could feel the rhythm of their matched strides in my bones. Then I hitched the spear up onto my shoulder and ran the length of the chariot pole until I stood perched between the shoulders of the galloping horses. My feet braced wide on the wooden yoke, harnessing them to the chariot. My goal that morning was as simple as it was impossible. Successfully execute a chariot maneuver called the Morrigan's Flight, named after the fearsome winged war goddess who flew over battlefields collecting the souls of the worthy dead. I'd watched my older sister, Sorsha, attempt it time after time. The idea was to run out along the narrow pole between the horses of a careening chariot, throw a spear, hit a target, balance for as long as it took for the spear to stay lodged, and then run back to the safety of the chariot deck. It was dangerous. It was thrilling. It was the supreme act of a true Kantiai warrior, and I'd never seen anyone do it, not even Sorsha. The last time Mal and I had attempted it, I'd lost my footing completely and dropped between the horses, barely managing to catch onto the pole with one arm and my knees. If I'd fallen, there was a good chance I would have been killed, trampled by hooves or run over by the chariot's wheels. But the goddess had not seen fit to take me that day, and Mal had managed to pull the horses to a stop before I lost my grip. The bruises had taken weeks to fade, and Mal had shouted at me for almost half an hour. His face flushed crimson and swore we would never, ever try such a thing again. He should have known I wouldn't leave him in peace until we did. So here we were, racing at breakneck speed across the floor of the Forgotten Vale, because at the break of dawn that morning, I, Fallon, youngest daughter of Variko the King, chief of the Kantiai tribe of Prydain, would turn 17 years old. Old enough to be made a member of my father's war band, just like my sister before me. And I was determined that before that moment came, I would master the Morrigan's Flight. And Mal, with his clever, steady hands on the reins, would see me do it. From somewhere in the other world, I imagined Sorsha watched as well. On the field of battle, you're either a warrior or you're in the way. My sister had scolded me one afternoon as my wooden practice sword missed its mark by a wide margin. She'd already proved herself to be one of the finest warriors of the Kantii tribe, and it was a lesson she had drilled into me over and over again until the day she died, killed in a skirmish defending the island of the mighty from Caesar's invading legions. Are you a weapon or target? Sorsha had asked. Choose, Fallon. So I chose, that day and every day after. The weight of the spear on my shoulder and the sword at my hip were as familiar to me now as my tunic and boots or my favorite cloak. As comforting as my father's rough laugh or the roaring fire in his great hall. As heady as one of Mal's slow smiles that more and more often seemed meant just for me. The thrumming of the chariot pony's hooves raced through my limbs like the pulsing of my blood. In another moment, Mal would have to steer the chariot into a sharp turn to avoid running up against the steep sides of the Forgotten Vale's barrow. Now or never. My fingers tightened on the spear shaft, and the target loomed large in front of me. I leaned forward over my bent knee, felt the spear tilt into a moment of perfect balance, and threw. The slender missile arced through the air like a deadly bird of prey, black against the dawn pink sky. I held my breath. A hit! Not perfect. The spear struck the target a hand's breadth to the left of where a flesh and blood man's heart would have beat. But still, it was a good, clean blow. Mal's elated shout confirmed that. I punched my fists skyward in victory before sweeping my arms out to either side, stretched wide as wings. I felt for that fleeting instant as if I really were the goddess Morrigan in flight, swooping low over a battlefield to collect the souls of the glorious dead. Then, as Mal eased the chariot into the turn, one of the ponies stumbled. The animal scrambled to regain its stride, and the yoke I was balancing on bobbled with it. My gesture of triumph turned into a frantic flailing as I lost my balance and grabbed the air to try to right myself. I heard Mal's jubilant shout distort into a cry of warning as I pitched sideways over the shoulder of the horse and cartwheeled helplessly through the air. My head hit something hard, and the world spiraled into darkness. Dull silence muffled the first strains of a lark's song. Fallon! The warmth on my cheek was either the kiss of the sun or the spill of my tears. Or was it blood? That was probably it, I thought dimly. I'd hit my head and split my skull open, and now I was going to die. On the morning of my 17th year. Fallon! Mal cried again. His voice sounded very near and very far away at the same time. I must be dead, I murmured, or else I'm dreaming. If this was a dream, it was a vivid one, one as clear as the dream that often haunted my nights, when the Morrigan, goddess of death and battle, would appear, terrible and magnificent in a cloak of raven feathers. In a voice like smoke and ashes, she would call me, Daughter. My eyes fluttered open and I found myself staring up into Mal's face, his nose only inches from mine. I realized that the warmth I'd felt on my cheek had been his breath. You're not dreaming, Fallon, Mal said, his eyes wide with worry. I grinned up at him. Who cares for merely dreaming about the Morrigan, I thought, when you can fly like her. Like I just had. The thrill of that moment still tingled in my blood. Well, if I'm not dreaming, I teased, then I suppose I must be dead. The dread vanished from Mal's face, chased away by a look of hot fury. You're not dead either, he snapped, the anger in his voice barely leashed, though damned well not for lack of trying. Why are you so angry? I asked irritably, grunting with the effort of raising myself up on one elbow. In the near distance, I could see my spear where it still quivered in the practice dummy's torso. Look, I pointed over his shoulder. We did it. You did it, Mal said, and then I almost killed you. That wasn't your fault. It was. He glared down at me fiercely. And if you ever make me do something as stupid and reckless as that again, I just might kill you, and it won't be by accident. Mal, are you trying to fulfill Olan's prophecy? He asked. Is that what you're trying to do? I rolled my eyes. It was true. My father's chief druid, Olan, had divined that I would one day follow in my sister Sorsha's footsteps. But she had been killed on the field of battle. The Forgotten Vale was nothing more than a placid meadow. I was a fool to let you talk me into this, Mal shook his head. You seem determined to test the will of the Morrigan. I opened my mouth. But for once, no sharp-tongued retort was forthcoming. It wasn't as if I weren't used to him scolding me. We'd grown up together, since I was 5 and he was 6, and we had spent most of those years enthusiastically arguing. Mal was the youngest son of Manuetios, king of the Trinovantes to the north. And as young boys, he and his brother Aiden had been sent to foster with our tribe, to grow to manhood as one of us, ensuring peace between the two kingdoms. One of the first things Mal had done upon meeting me was break my baby finger with a wooden practice sword in a play fight. Ever since that moment, he'd harbored an annoying streak of overprotectiveness that was at constant odds with his natural inclination to fight with me at every opportunity. It drove me mad. The two of us together were like flint and iron, forever sparking off each other. Most of the time, I was hard-pressed to decide if I couldn't stand Mal, or if I'd be lost without him. But as I looked up at him, I saw genuine worry in his eyes. I realized he really had thought I was hurt. Mal, I said, reaching up to brush back the strands of dark hair that fell in his face. I'm sorry, His lips on mine silenced my apology, muffling my words with his sudden, hungry kiss. My eyes went wide, then drifted shut, plunging me into a red-lit darkness. My heart was a glowing ember bursting into flame, and all I could think was that this was what joy felt like, fierce and demanding. My eyelids fluttered open again, and I gazed up at Mal, at the flecks of dark silver in his eyes. They glinted like the raw iron our blacksmith melted down to forge swords and daggers and all manner of dangerous and beautiful things. Suddenly, I knew the answer. Lost. I would be completely lost without Mao. My pulse surged loudly in my ears, and my fingers tangled in his long hair as I drew him down to me again. Mao's full weight pressed me back into the damp grass, and his broad hands slipped beneath me, fingertips slowly sliding from my shoulders all the way down to the small of my back. My spine arched as he lifted me up off the mossy ground, wrapping his arms around my torso and pulling me close to his chest. His mouth traveled from my lips to the side of my throat, beneath my ear, and then I heard myself gasp, first with surprise and then in protest, as he suddenly tore himself away from me. The breeze that now flowed between us prickled my skin as Mal threw himself onto his back with a sigh. He lay there for a moment, chest heaving and face flushed, and I wondered if we'd done something horribly wrong. It was the first time I'd ever kissed anyone like that. But then he rolled his head toward me. His gray eyes flashed dangerously. Today, he said in a ragged voice. Mal, my head spun dizzily. This morning. He sat up and rolled back onto his knees in front of me, grasping me by the shoulders and pulling me toward him. This very morning, Fallon. I gazed at him in wary confusion. What about it? I'm going to go to Veriko and I'm going to ask him for your hand. The words tumbled from him in a rush. Now, so that he can announce it tonight at the Feast of the Four Tribes, in front of everyone and... No! What? Mal said, faltering. Valen? I shook my head a little wildly. My heart. It's already yours, Mal, I said. You don't need to ask for my hand. Yes, he said, adamant. I do. You can't have it. I felt a tiny shiver of panic in my chest. Not yet. I thought, he groped for words as his cheeks reddened. I thought you, I do. How could I explain it to him? It wasn't that I didn't want him. I did, even if I'd only just begun to realize how much. But there was something I wanted, needed first. I needed the chance to earn my own name. I bit my lip. It's just that tonight, my father is going to make me a member of his royal war band. I know he is. I watched as Mal's face clouded over. The feverish moment of our kiss was slipping away. Please, Mal, I reached up a hand and pressed it to his cheek. You have to wait for me. I can't let anything stand in the way of this. I've worked too hard. I don't want to give Veriko any reason not to give me that honor. Mal pulled away from my touch. Sometimes I wonder if you care more for your sword than for me, he said. How can you even say that? I snapped, ignoring the small voice in my head that hissed the very same thing. You're already a member of the war band. You would deny me the honor and glory of fighting at your side. That stung. I could see it in his eyes. No, he said. I would never deny you that, Valen. I reached for his hands. Just wait a little while, Mal, until I'm a true warrior. We can go to my father then, and we can have everything we ever wanted. Together. All right, Mal said finally, his familiar grin returning. I'll wait, Valen, as long as it takes. But maybe we can make the wait feel shorter. Then he kissed me again, and for once, I forgot all about arguing with him. Chapter 2. The day's afternoon was bright and brilliant, and all the more beautiful for my having spent its morning kissing Mal in the Forgotten Vale. But inside my house in Durovanum, the house that I once shared with Sorsha, it was dark. I let the heavy leather door curtain fall closed behind me and moved through the room, lighting the lamps. Over the years, Sorsha had collected more than a dozen of the things, shining, delicately wrought metal or carved alabaster, or clay painted with jewel-bright glazes, and hung them from the ceiling poles in our cozy little house on chains of different lengths. My favorite was the one shaped like a bird, with bits of blue and green glass set into the wings that made it glow with a fey light. The lamps had mostly come from far away, as had most of my sister's precious things, brought over in ships by traders from places across the sea, places like Gaul and Greece and Egypt and Rome. As much as Sorsha had taken delight in professing her hatred for Caesar at any opportunity, that hate hadn't influenced her fondness for fine and decorative things from the lands his legions had conquered. Just another one of my sister's many contradictions, I suppose. I once saw a mosaic in a trader's stall, and that was what imagining Sorsha was like. A multitude of sharp, shining pieces that, taken together, made up a whole image, told a whole story. As I lit the last of the lamps, I thought about the day they told me my sister was dead, killed by the Romans. The women of the tribes of Pridane, Cantii and Catuvellani, Trinovantes and Iceni, could choose to fight alongside the men or not. Many did, and with such skill that they were feared as much as the men, more so even. The legions thought that the women warriors of the Island of the Mighty were demons, aberrations whose corpses they burned in heaps after battles so that their black souls could never escape to inhabit another body. Of course, I knew just how ridiculous that was. A primitive superstition. The fighting women of the tribes of Pridane were as good as they were because they worked at it. I worked at it. hard. It was as simple and as complicated as that. Cast in the ethereal glow of flickering lamplight, I stood staring at the wavering apparition reflected back at me from the polished bronze mirror hanging on the wall. Another of Sorsha's exotic treasures. I raised an eyebrow at the ragged creature. Even in that uncertain light, I saw a smudge of dirt on my left cheek, partially obscuring the smattering of freckles there. The long tunic I wore over my shift of thin wool had once been a bright red and purple check, but was now worn to faded shades of rust, stained from climbing hills and fording brooks, and fighting Mal day after day in the vale. A tangled, unruly crown of fox-brown strands had escaped from the plaits to which I'd hastily consigned my hair in the dark hours before dawn. At the age of 17, I might have the lean muscles and the long, strong legs that a warrior ought to have, but I would have to make myself presentable for when my father honored me with my full warrior status, just like he had my sister before me. Sorsha was older by 9 full years, and she'd never let me forget it. There were 2 baby brothers born between us, but they had both been lost to marsh fever before the age of 3. And our mother had followed them to the other world herself only days after I was born, leaving Sorsha to raise me and keep me out of trouble, when our father, the king, was too busy ruling a sprawling tribe of brawling Celts to pay me much heed. The fact that she probably got me into more trouble than she ever kept me out of never bothered me a bit. She was everything I wanted to be when I grew up, strong and sharp and dangerous as the sword she carried on her hip. Sorsha was my goddess, even more than the Morrigan we both worshipped. I followed her everywhere, stumbling along on baby legs behind her as she ran, deer swift, through the forests of our home, always looking for an adventure, or better yet, a fight to pick. And then, one day it all changed. Caesar and his legions landed on our shores, not once, but twice. And the second time, they took my father, King Verrico, prisoner in a hard-fought battle. When the gathered tribes rode out in their chariots to free him, Verrico's royal warband led the charge. 3 days later, father came home. Sorsha didn't. My fierce, bright, beautiful sister was gone. Dead. Just like that. It had been almost 7 years since the legions left our shores, having declared the island of the mighty sufficiently conquered. In all that time, the Romans had not returned to Prydaine, the island they called Britannia, in their strident native tongue. Of course, the traders had never left. They'd been here before Caesar had set foot on our shore, and they'd stayed when he'd departed, triumphant. Since that time, we'd been left in peace. But one day, the legions would return to finish what they'd started. Prydaine was too rich a resource for gold and tin and timber, and barbarian slaves. Caesar and his kind wouldn't be able to resist. The armies of Rome would return, and we would be ready to fight them when they did. I would be ready to fight, just as my sister had. Only I wouldn't fall to the thrust of a Roman sword. The night Sorsha had ridden out in her chariot for the last time, I'd sat on the end of the bed watching her in the mirror as she buckled the straps of her breastplate and adjusted the hang of her sword on her hip. Angry at being left behind yet again, I complained loudly to Sorsha's reflection about how I wanted to go out to fight Caesar's legions with her. She ignored me as long as she could. Enough, Sorsha said finally, rounding on me. Have you really thought about what it means to be a warrior, Fallon? I blinked at her, noticing for the first time the turbulence in her gaze. Have you? She sighed. Because I have. It means you kill. You kill men, you kill women, all while they are trying very hard to kill you. And if one of them is better at it than you, then you die. Are you so eager to dance with death, little sister? I was 10 years old. I didn't know what to say. What I should have said was, don't go. But instead, I just pouted and stayed silent. Saoirse left our house and never returned to hear my answer to her question. That was the first night that the Morrigan visited me in my sleep and named me. Me, not Saoirse, her daughter. It was a sacred thing, fearsome and awesome all at once, and I'd never told anyone, but I'd always kept the memory of her voice locked away in my heart. I shook myself free from the clutches of those memories. Never mind that night. After this night, the Khantii would see me as the newest member of my father's royal warband, not just as a legendary Saoirse's little sister. Facing the mirror, I picked up the carved bone comb that lay among a pile of bracelets and ear hoops on top of a wicker trunk. The occasion demanded that I should at least put a little effort into my appearance. Normally, I would have called for the bondswomen who attended me to deal with such things, but today seemed somehow as if it was meant to be mine alone, and I wanted to savor it. What had already happened and what was to come, without the drone of gossipy slaves in my ears. The merry chaos of this evening's feast would come soon enough, even with the distractions of choosing a tunic and shift, setting out jewelry and taming my hair into submission, things I had little patience or skill with. All I could think of was what my father would say at the feast. As the sun sank over the far purple hills, I imagined how he would welcome me into his warband with silver words, praising my prowess with sword and spear. Indeed, the great hall would be crowded with Prydain royalty, including Aidan, Mal's older brother by 2 years. After the passing of their father, Manuetios, he was now king of the Trinovantes. The thought of seeing him made me smile. We'd all grown up together when Aidan was still a fosterling in our tribe, but Mal and I hadn't seen him in a good long while, not since their father's great betrayal. But after our morning spent in the Vale, Mal had gotten word that Aidan and his train of Trinovante chiefs had arrived in Drovenham. I had sent him off to greet his brother while I untangled the brambles from my hair. Every 2 years, on the eve of Lunasa, which also happened to be my birthday, the kings of the four tribes came together to feast and toast each other with wide smiles and enough thick foamy beer to strengthen the bonds of friendship forged in the alliances of years past. This would be Aidan's first time there as king, newly returned from a long period of exile in Rome after his father was killed, executed for selling vital information to the Romans. Mal never spoke of his father's betrayal, but he'd remained with the Khantii since that time, past the usual age of fostering because of it. As for his feelings toward his brother, Mal had always known that when he returned from Rome, Aidan would be king, not him. And so he bore him no ill will. The three of us, four if you counted the times Saoirse indulged in our mischief, had grown up together, and I'd feared that Mal might come to resent his brother. But he never did, which was a great relief to me. We were like family, and I would have hated for anything to come between us. I finished dressing with care, adjusting the delicate silver torque around my neck with nervous fingers. I could hear laughter and shouting outside my door. The festival atmosphere that had slowly grown throughout Drovenham over the preceding weeks had finally burst into full bloom. Beyond the town's wooden palisades, in the fields leading down to the docks on the River Dour, there were games and contests and stalls selling bolts of brightly colored cloth, arm rings and furs, food and drink, and songs that could be bought from the bards to woo a lover from afar or shame a rival without bloodshed. Charioteers raced their pony-drawn carts up and down the winding tracks, none with quite the skill or daring of Mal and me, and the very air crackled with anticipation of the feast that would begin after sundown. At last, the sky shaded to indigo in the east, and the rich smells that had seasoned the breezes all day, spit-roasting boar and venison, stewed in great cauldrons, drew the nobles of the four tribes and their free men and free women to gather in the great hall. I took a last nervous glance at myself in the mirror. I'd brushed the thick waves of my hair until they shimmered down my back, and I dressed them off my face with a circlet of red gold that twined about my brow. I had to admit, the look suited me. A gown of leaf-green wool under a russet and purple mantle draped the lines of my body. The torque around my neck gleamed, and the stacked bronze and silver bangles on my wrists jangled as I pushed aside my door curtain and headed up the winding path to my father's great hall. Once inside, I was enveloped by the smells of roasting meat and peat smoke and had to snake through the crush of bodies to find my seat by the hearth. "You dress like a proper queen this night," Clota, my father's chief bondswoman, said, chuckling as she leaned over to fill my cup with mead. "And more than one lad here tonight seems to have noticed, finally, that you are a girl." I rolled my eyes and reached for a platter of honeyed oatcakes and apples, too nervous to eat much. I shifted on the low bench seat near my father's left hand and wondered where Mal had gotten to. Clota might have been joking, but in truth, I could almost feel the looks from all about the hall, glances that traced the lines of my limbs, the planes of my face. But when I sought them out, there was only one person who was bold enough to return my gaze. And it was not Malgun Ironhand, but his brother, Aiden. I grinned and raised my hand in greeting, but Aiden did not smile back. Instead, he just raised his cup to me. "He knows," I thought, my stomach knotting a bit. "Mal told him." Aiden was 2 years older than his brother, but they were unmistakably related. Both had dark hair, worn long, and almost identical slate-gray eyes. Like his younger brother, Aiden was handsome and clever and good with a sword. But to me, at least, his had always seemed more of a brooding presence, sitting in the shadows just beyond the circle of firelight. Where Mal's eyes could shine bright with passion or burn dark with anger, Aiden's gaze always seemed to me a bit cool, sharp, like the blade of a fine iron knife waiting to be used. The veneer of Roman culture that he'd adopted from his time in that place. He drank wine and draped his cloak over one arm like a toga, only emphasized the contrast between the brothers. But as different as they were, I had always loved them both. Aiden, like a brother. Mal, as something more. Much more, it seemed. I turned away from Aiden's gaze before he noticed the blush creeping up my cheeks. Clota passed by in that moment, and I lunged for her tray, snatching up another mug of spiced mead. I'd gulped the first one down far too fast in an attempt to steady my nerves. I glanced around the room again, suddenly desperate to find Mal's face. I thought I saw him pass through the archway of the great oak doors and half rose from my seat to go to him. But then a drift of conversation between a grizzled old bear of a Catu Veloni warrior and a pair of young men, free men of a visiting chief from Gaul, by the strange look of them, caught my attention.
"How goes the resistance, then?" the old bear asked. "Do the Arverni and the Carnutes still harry the Romans in Gaul and set fire to their forts?"
One of the freemen with tattoos on his cheeks and red-rimmed eyes spat.
"There is no resistance since Arviragus surrendered, the coward."
I was pretending not to listen, but could barely hide my shock.
"Arviragus? A coward? Impossible."
I had met the Gaulish warrior king when I was young, and he was but a prince. But I'd been awed by his bravery and skill with a sword. He would never surrender to the Romans.
"He was no coward," his companion said loudly, chewing his words through a mouthful of meat. "But he was a fool, letting himself be taken by the Roman. I'd have fallen on my own sword first."
"Be careful how you speak,"
the older man snapped, his eyes flicking to where my father, Veriko, sat, gazing out over the gathered crowd.
Why? Darkbeer sloshed over the rim of the young warrior's mug. Oh, simply speak the truth.
I realized in that moment that he either didn't know or didn't care that, like Arviragus, my father himself had once been captured by Caesar, or that his beloved daughter Sorsha had led an army to free him, and in doing so had been lost herself. His tattooed companion began to guffaw.
Maybe he's right, Biron. Perhaps these Pridane tribes have the way of it. Why even fight the Romans? Easier to let them think they've had their way with you. And in the morning, they'll just hitch up their skirts and leave you in peace.
Drunkards, I seethed, my hand tightening on my dagger. I was close enough to my father to see that he'd heard the exchange. For a moment, I wondered if he'd silence the fools with his blade, but his only reaction was to toss back the rest of his own drink and stand. Veriko Lugotorix, rising to his feet, was a sure way to draw the attention of even the drunkest of revelers. Two of the half-slaves heaved a heavy log onto the great fire at the same time. As firefly sparks bloomed around him, my father looked like the king of some fiery underground realm. His chestnut hair and beard gleamed, and his handsome face glowed crimson.
Tuetie, he bellowed. Welcome. The voices of the four tribes sing you peace. The island of the mighty carries you on her green shoulders. Fill your bellies and your hearts this night in my hall, and we shall be as one people, one tribe. More so for the good tidings I tell you now.
The men and women in the hall fell silent and leaned forward, straining to catch the next words of Eriko's grand pronouncement. I leaned forward too, my fingertips biting into the edge of my seat as I waited, breathless for my father's call to me to join his elite warrior band. Finally, I would have my chance to make him proud as Sorsha ever did.
My daughter, Fallon, is the jewel of my house, he continued, gesturing toward me. She is of age now, as of this very night. Her heart is golden, and her sword is a spark in the darkness. And I would have her take her place among my war chiefs, as both her mother and her sister did before her.
My cheeks flushed, and I felt elated as the blood rushed from my head to my feet and back again, leaving me hot and cold in waves.
But for this,
Veriko's voice lapsed into echoing silence. This? I looked up at him. He refused to meet my gaze, and when he spoke again, it was like the sound of a blade's edge dragging over a whetstone. He lifted his head and called out a name.
Aidan Ap Manoetios.
Aidan? I stood up and tried to speak, but my voice fled from me in that moment.
Come forth, Veriko bellowed. Come and claim my daughter's hand before our gathered friends here in my hall.
No, I thought. He's made a mistake.
Aidan, Veriko shouted again.
He beckoned with one hand, fingers winking with gold rings.
Chief among our dear friends, the Trinovante, my soon-to-be son, come forth.
A roar went up from the gathered crowd, but I was shocked into silence. The smoke-dark air seemed to thicken, pressing against my skin. I glanced wildly around the room, searching until I finally spotted Mal's ashen face. He stood frozen near the stacked barrels of beer and mead, surrounded by a group of laughing Trinovante chiefs and freemen. Young men from Mal's own tribe, all friends of Aiden's. His dazed expression turned to fury in a moment. I saw him shout his brother's name, but I couldn't hear him over the noise. At the same time, Aidan worked his way through the press of bodies packing the hall, accepting hearty, undeserved congratulations with a grin tugging at his lips. Only I saw how the bashful expression never reached Aidan's dark eyes. This is all a terrible mistake. Father is drunk. He's not thinking clearly.
Mal!
I shouted above the raucous din. Do something! Mal could stop Aiden, talk reason to him, or, at the very least, challenge his absurd claim. We could still stop this. We just had to get to my father. Mal shouted back, but I couldn't make out the words. He was too far away, and Aiden was too close, moving nimbly through the crowd of gathered tribesmen and tribeswomen toward where I stood. Father, I reached out a hand, grabbing at Veriko's sleeve, but the cries of the chiefs and their free men shook the very air of the great roundhouse and drowned out my protests. Veriko's head swung around, his eyes fever bright in the firelight. I knew you would be upset, he said in a low, urgent voice. But I cannot make you a war chief, Fallon. I lost your sister to the sword. I will not have you suffer the same fate as Sorcerer. I cannot lose you both. No, I shook my head desperately. Father, you can't do this to me. But just then, Aiden reached me. An even more thunderous shout erupted from the gathering as he spun me around and kissed me hard on the lips. It was the second time that day that a son of Manu Etios had kissed me. Only this time, it felt like poison pouring into my mouth. I struggled to push Aiden away, but there was nowhere to push him to. The throng was crushing. The women of the Cantii converged upon me with fierce embraces and well-wishing. Some of them burst into song, and others whirled and threw their arms in the air. If there was one thing every good Celt loved, it was love itself. They sang of it, fought for it, wept bitter tears into mugs of mead over the loss of it, and, if the slightest hint of a joyous union so much as wafted past on a breeze, seized the opportunity to celebrate it ferociously. Over near the mead vats, there was a commotion as Mal struggled against the crowd toward Aiden and me. I thought I might have actually seen him throw a punch, but then Aiden blocked my view and forced me back a step. That close, I could see his face was flushed, with drink, or desire, or both, and his dark eyes shone. The crush of bodies, the brightly woven cloaks and jangling jewelry, the braided hair and painted eyes, lips, mouths, tangled tattoos and talks and shouting, the stench of beer and bodies and meat. For the first time in my life, I thought that I might actually faint. When the scuffle by the vats upended a large, foaming tub of mead, the crowd suddenly ebbed in that direction with cries of outrage and shouts of drunken laughter, cheering on the combatants. In the ensuing chaos, I ducked beneath Aiden's arm and ran for the great hall doors. Chapter 3. Lightning lashed the night sky over Derovenum. In the time I'd been inside the Great Hall, black storm clouds had rolled in and the sky was pouring rain. I could barely see to make it back to my house. Once inside, I stirred the banked coals of the brazier to sullen life. It did nothing to ease the chill that gripped my bones. Not only had my father as good as severed the sword hand from my arm, he'd cut the heart out of my body. And then, given it to the brother of the boy I loved. My father had betrayed me not once, but twice. I spat out a string of curses wrapped around Veriko's name and dropped to my knees in front of the fire. And then I began to slowly, methodically remove all the ornaments I had so carefully chosen just hours before. The rings and the bracelets and earrings that marked me as a woman. The torque around my neck that marked me as a princess. Even the dagger in the sheath at my hip that marked me as a warrior. Suddenly, I wanted none of it. One by one, I stripped them all off and dropped them onto the fire, watching as the pale flames licked the shining, precious metal black. I wished in that moment that my father had never come home from Caesar's camp. It was his fault Sorcerer was dead. She'd gone to save him and died a hero. The kind of hero my father had just denied me every right and opportunity to ever be. And I hated him for that. For that, and for taking Mal from me. That morning, I turned down Mal's marriage pledge. And for what? For the chance to seize a destiny that had never been mine to take in the first place. The brazier flames blurred before my eyes as I fought back furious tears.
Drink with me?
I spun around on my knees, blinking away the wetness, to see Aiden leaning on my doorframe. He pushed the hood of his rain-soaked cloak back from his face and dangled a small amphora of Roman wine and two mugs with his other hand.
Well, wife?
I'm not your wife.
Not yet.
Not ever, I said. And if you call me by that word again, it'll be the last sound that ever worms its way between your teeth. He laughed.
Come on, he said through a grin. Fallon, think of your father.
I stood to face Aiden, wary. My gown was soaked through from the storm and clung to my body, but I refused to hide behind crossed arms. Instead, I dropped my right hand to rest on the hilt of the dagger at my belt, except the sheath was empty. I had tossed the dagger into the fire. Aiden's glance flicked from my hand to the fire in the brazier, and he frowned faintly. He stepped inside, and the curtain fell closed behind him, shutting out the hiss of the rain.
Think how much Fariko wants, needs, alliances like this one, he said.
Surely he could have given me to your brother, and still had his alliance with the Trinovante.
True,
Aiden shrugged as he stepped further into the room.
Indeed, I think it was Fariko's first thought. But fortunately, I convinced my uncle to counsel him otherwise.
The packed earth floor of the little roundhouse felt as though it were dropping out from beneath my feet. I was so angry that I couldn't even find words to hurl at Aiden. My rage had me dumbstruck.
Fariko knows how close you and Malgun have always been, Aiden continued.
He moved across the room to a low couch and sat, placing the wine cups on a small table.
Close as brother and sister.
The shadow of a sneer curled his lip.
Your father, after a deal of convincing to be sure, came to realize it. He came to see that it wouldn't be fair to give you away in a match that was nothing more than sibling affection and no real love.
But I do love Mal. And I'd had the chance to tell him, to be with him in the Vale that morning. I loved Malgun Iron Hand, and Aiden knew it. He'd known it all along, even before I did. I saw it in his gray eyes, and I saw that he hated his brother because of it. Because of me.
Count yourself lucky that your father has a care for your heart, Fallon, Aiden said, working the stopper from the wine jug. As do I. You should be glad.
Forgive me if I don't rejoice, I spat. Aiden stood, and the amphora slipped from his fingers and smashed on the floor. Wine leaked out of the broken vessel like blood from a wound.
There has always been something between us, Fallon, he said urgently, hasn't there? If I hadn't gone away, if it had been Malgun and not me who had been forced to flee to Rome.
In two paces, he was across the room, gripping me hard by the shoulders. A flush crawled up Aiden's sharp features and a vein pulsed at the side of his neck.
I never forgot about you, he said. I always knew that one day I'd come back for you. I can take you places, Fallon. I will take you places. It's all set in motion already,
and you'll be happy.
I promise you. Rome is a place of wonder. They build palaces of gleaming stone, and the air is like perfume.
But there's more, Fallon. They're fierce. They have fighters. Warriors, like you've never known.
Like the Roman legions your father sold our people out to, I snapped.
Aiden barely flinched at my outrage.
I'll show you things you could never have imagined, Fallon. Not even in your dreams. And we'll finally be together.
I stared at him in disbelief. I had never, not once in my life, thought of Aiden that way. The very idea that he had woven some kind of fantasy in his mind and wrapped me up in it was beyond me. He leaned in to kiss me again, but this time instinct took over as Aiden's fingers dug into my flesh. I dropped back into a defensive stance, knees bent and head down. I went again for my knife, which, of course, wasn't there, and instead gritted my teeth and jammed my knee into his groin, shoving him away as he gasped in pain and staggered back. From behind a sweep of dark hair, Aiden's eyes glinted dangerously in the darkness, his fists knotted at his sides.
"That wasn't nice, wife."
The breath rasped in his throat.
"A Roman woman would know how to better control herself. But there'll be plenty of time for me to teach you. Aiden."
Mal's voice cut through the air like a knife.
"Hello, brother."
Aiden straightened up and turned around slowly.
"Come to share in my soon-to-be wedded joy."
Two swords flashed in the darkness, and Aiden suddenly found himself collared by Mal's twin blades, crossed in front of his throat. They bit into the flesh just above the king's torque he wore. Mal pressed his brother back toward the door, relentless.
"Get out," he said, "before I stain my swords with your worthless blood. And here I thought that you'd be happy for me, little brother."
Aiden lifted his chin and glared at Mal above the blades, but he backed up a step nonetheless.
"For her, at least. I bring Fallon a chance to escape. I will take her to a place where she'll live like the warrior queen she's meant to be. You'd just wind up getting her killed in a tribal raid one day. I said, get out."
Mal roared and drew back his blades to strike. But Aiden was already gone, slipping out and disappearing into the black rain. Mal stood there for a long time, his back to me, shoulders heaving. Then he sheathed his swords and turned, anguish twisting his face.
"Where were you tonight?" I asked.
"Aiden," he spat. "His chieftains kept me from you."
His grey eyes were full of anger and hurt. There was blood at the corner of his mouth, and the shadow of a new bruise blooming along his jaw. I remembered the uproar near the beer vats in the hall.
"Did you know this was going to happen?"
he demanded.
"Is that why you refused me this morning? To be with Aiden?"
"What?" I stared at him, incredulous. "How could you even think such a thing? I meant what I said, Mal. You alone have my heart."
Mal's anger vanished almost instantly, but the hurt remained deep and dark in his eyes.
"Fallon, I'm sorry. I just..."
He swallowed thickly.
"You are all that has been in my heart since the day we met. When I sleep, I see your face. When I wake, I long to. You are as fierce and as beautiful and as deadly to me as your sword is. And so I promised to wait. But then..."
"Then what?"
"Then Aiden was there, his mouth twisted in disgust. And he was kissing you."
"I wasn't kissing him.
I know."
He angrily clawed back the wet hair from his face.
"I know that now. I'll go to him. Veriko, I'll tell him that we've already laid claim to each other's hearts."
"You can't. It's too late."
I knew my father. Had Mal fought his way through to me in the hall? If he had stood before Aiden and challenged him there and then, Veriko might have considered such a claim. But it was a lifetime too late for that now. My father would not go back on a pledge, one made in front of the whole of the four tribes, and he would not change his mind. He would not suffer his chiefs to call him weak or cowardly. He had suffered enough of that in the days after the Romans had returned him from capture. How, his freemen had asked, had the king not taken his own life rather than suffer the shame of Roman captivity? How had he come back to Derovenum alive when his own daughter had died in battle? It had taken Veriko Lugotorix years to regain the respect of the chiefs. He would not risk it now. Not on my account.
"And I'll never be a warrior now,"
I said slowly, feeling the weight of each word. Mal shot me a sharp glance.
"Don't."
I held up a warning hand. if my father had made me choose, if he'd even bothered to give me a choice. Know this, I would have given up my sword for you, Maelgwn Ironhand. You, not your brother.
Well, it's too late for that now, isn't it?
The bitterness returned to his voice.
If we had gone to your father this morning, none of this would have happened.
How could I have known, Mal?
I almost shouted.
I am the one left with nothing. And you're jealous of cold steel.
A wave of misery swept over us both, and we stood there, staring at each other with helpless regret and longing. How had everything gone so wrong so quickly? It should have been a night of celebration for me. But my proud moment lay shattered and strewn at my feet.
We'll go, I said. We'll leave tonight and go west. There are tribes who would be happy to have us, and we can be together.
No, Mal's fists clenched, white-knuckled, at his sides. I'm not running like a coward. This is my home, your tribe, and Aiden has no right to take that away from us.
He strode to the door, slapping aside the leather curtain to let in a gust of dark rain.
Mal!
I ran after him, grabbing him by the arm.
Where are you going?
To find him. He will set this right.
Mal shook free of my grip. He hitched up his swords and tugged his cloak hood over his head.
And if he